about a month or so ago, we burst a lot of bubbles here, demonstrating the fact that teen births in this country have been going down now for a number of years. Teen births here in the Indianapolis area in Indiana have been going down. The number and the percentage of births that occur to teen moms, even to moms 18 and 19, is going down. It is a minority of all births in the African-American community and in the Latino community and definitely in the white community. But there are still teen moms. So this past, Tuesday?
Monday.
This past Monday night at Light of the World Church, there was a continuing, the Department of Public Safety has been doing all kinds of community conversations with everybody. And so they decided to have a community conversation with teen moms. And what kind of issues are teen moms focusing, and how could the community respond and help these young women? It's part of the Women's Fund Next initiative, designed to help emerging young women 18 to 25, or maybe just a little bit younger than 18. In the house is Jennifer Pope Baker, who's the executive director of the Women's Fund, and Valerie Washington, the deputy director of the Department of Public Safety. Ladies, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So what did you guys learn from teen moms?
Well, I don't think we learned anything that surprised us. We learned from the girls' confirmation that childcare is their most distressing and important need, that we heard from them repeatedly that not only affordable childcare is necessary, but safe childcare, and that these young women felt really limited in the ability to continue their education or have the ability to have a job to care for their children because they didn't have a safe place to leave their children, nor could they afford quality childcare.
For young moms who are of high school and maybe middle school age, are the schools accommodating of moms, or is there a stigma there? Did that come out?
It did come out really early on in talking to these ladies. We were surprised at the number of times they said teachers were not understanding. They are more so at the high school level. Some of the girls that had made it to college and early in their college career said definitely at the college level, professors weren't understanding to their needs. Some of the high schools, they had some issues. And as Jennifer and I were talking, one of the things that we would suggest is doing some training for teachers so they are aware of the barriers that a teen mom is dealing with in her school
life. Let me go back at the college level, because given that at the college level there could be a woman in her 20s or 30s in college, particularly at schools here in Indianapolis, whether it's the Ivy Techs, whether it's the proprietary schools, whether it is an IUPUI, if the professors are having that attitude towards an 18 or a 19-year-old mom who's expecting, my goodness, what are they going to have with somebody that's older? Well, and now you're getting into some federal, civil rights issues.
Well, I think some of it, too, is even mentoring some of these girls on how to approach the professors and just knowing how to communicate and maybe planning ahead better. So I think that there's probably some onus on both sides. Mm-hmm. And I do think a big component would be educating the girls on how to utilize the professor's office hours and kind of do those things in their college experience to gain a better rapport with their professors. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely noted as a barrier from a couple of the women.
I agree. And I think that when you look at older women who are in college and they may be pregnant or with small children, if you're talking about someone who's in their 20s or 30s, they probably have better coping skills. They're probably in a different place in their life where they have some more balance than a young woman who, if she's a teen mom going to college, what we heard from these young women is they're the first person in their family to graduate from high school, the first person to go to college, and they don't have anybody to guide them. They don't have anybody to help them know the kinds of things that I'll be able to share with my daughter someday when she goes to college. I'll be able to share with my daughter someday when she becomes a mother. They don't have people in their lives to help provide that counsel after they get out of high school in particular, because there are a lot of great girl programs that they participate in, but they don't have that same support as a young adult women, which is the whole reason why we're creating the next initiative.
So there is no big sister for very young moms?
I guess Jennifer could probably better answer that, but I would think
that something that came out in those discussions, maybe not from the moms themselves, but as you're listening?
Well, I think that the one-on-one mentoring for mothers, young mothers, whether you're talking about a teen mom or a very young woman, that one-on-one mentoring is really missing. The young women who participated in our conversation the other day are well connected with programs in our community. Mm-hmm. And when they have the one-on-one mentoring, it makes a difference. And when they don't, we can see that that's where there are big gaps.
Is the place to start those kind of what I call intervention, maybe the wrong words. There's probably a noun that I can't think of right now that would be a little bit more appropriate. But is the proper place to start making that contact on the assumption that the prospective mom is going to a doctor and they're getting the prenatal at the prenatal, you know, and hopefully they're getting picked up that way?
I think that a lot of the programs that exist are making sure that that happens. It's the girls who aren't connected to those programs that makes it difficult. So if they're participating in Healthy Start or Future Promises or Project Home Indy or Parents as Teachers, Goodwill, that those organizations are doing a really nice job of making sure those things happen with pregnant moms. But it's the girls who don't have those connections that are falling through the cracks.
239-1310. This afternoon's name is we're with Jennifer Pope Baker, Executive Director of the Women's Fund, with Valerie Washington, with who's Deputy Director of the Department of Public Safety. Is there still the stigma? As you talk to these young women, you know, one could argue, and my audience would argue, that society today is so permeated with, you know, teen moms, and it's hip, and well, maybe not hip, but the popular culture does not put the stigma out, so they would assume the stigma that existed 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago to a young unwed mom doesn't exist today. What were these young ladies telling you? Is the stigma still there?
I would say most definitely the stigma is still there for them. In talking with them, it is very clear that they are often not respected by the people that they come in contact with as they're trying to get some of the resources, as they're trying to get low-income
Not just
housing.
In home. Not We're not talking about the lack of their families kind of looking.
No.
Now, this is out in the general society.
Even out in the general society, several of the girls told stories of trying to get childcare assistance and just dealing with rude personnel and people making them feel shameful for their situation.
And one of the things that was interesting to me is there were a couple different instances where they were referring to a community service that's supposed to be of benefit to them. And each and every one of those girls knew the exact person that the other person mentioned that was unkind and disrespectful and made things really difficult for them. And that person is in a job that where they're being paid to be helpful. We have both public and private supports that are available to these young women that they are allowed to access. And so when they try to access those supports, they need to be treated with dignity and respect. And some of these girls may feel like they made a mistake by being pregnant and a parent at such a young age, and some might not. Mm-hmm. But regardless of what anybody thinks about them, if they're in a position where they're being paid to provide a service, then absolutely they are commanded to be respectful and to give these young women their dignity.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Jennifer Pope Baker and Valerie Washington. From the Department of Public Safety's point of view in the community conversations, how does what you hear help in the whole public safety thing?
I think it helps us as Director Troy Riggs is working with the police chief, with the mayor's office, and trying to understand crime in our city. We have just discovered some of the social issues that are tied to crime, such as, you know, women having children at a young age, the heroin issue, some of the mental health issues. And we wanted to take the opportunity to use the community conversation to reach out and give some of those folks an opportunity, especially teen moms, to have a voice at the table and let us know what their concerns are. And are there things in public safety that we could be doing to better connect them with resources?
Is there also the tension between the teen mom and the dad?
It was interesting when we heard these young women. I would say it was pretty evenly divided. I mean, some of the girls were saying the fathers of their children need the same kind of help they do because they want a parent, but they don't know how. They don't have access. They don't have people supporting them. And that they were saying that some of those young men were also being ostracized by their families or in the community.
So they were saying that in some of the cases, the dads were trying to be responsible dads. Mm-hmm. They were trying to man up. They were trying to take responsibility. And the system was like kind of pushing them away.
Yes. And I think then the other half we heard about, you know, girls who are trying to get child support and taking the father, you know, with them to court and not being able to have that happen. And so there were just
Wait, they're together in court? In a positive way, they're both working together, and the court's not helping them.
If that's the way we heard the story.
Okay. All right. I don't know whether that's, I'm not.
And I would say maybe not necessarily positive, but they were there for the same mission. And
the same reason, right.
The women were just able to get the boyfriends to come along with them, sometimes begrudgingly, but to at least get the paperwork filed.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons is these girls also don't understand how the system works. And so there were a lot of complaints about how our governmental systems fail them. And I think that for me, it's hard to understand, is the failure a true failure on the governmental end, or is it because the girls don't understand how things work, that people weren't being helpful to them to understand process and timeline? And I think it probably lies somewhere in between, which really shows the need for people who are working alongside them to be helpful to them. And I think that one of the things that's really important to remember about these young teen moms, too, is some of these girls didn't choose to be mothers. Some of these girls became mothers because of an act of violence that was committed against them. And they've chosen to be brave and to parent. And so I think that that's really important for our community to remember as well, that not all these girls went into this.
Well, let me go back to that, because I think sometimes people forget that. And if there are a lot of people in my audience that feel strongly about life, and they forget that if someone has been the victim of rape, and sometimes God in his wisdom, a child will come out of that wrong, and instead of putting the young lady down, we ought to be respecting and tolerating life.
And it's unfair for anybody to assume how that circumstance took place for that young woman.
Okay. So then the system, quote unquote, or everybody giving them the eye and downing them is putting the person that's been through that negative experience into more negative.
Right.
Because she's not, you know, advertising that.
Right.
239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is Let Me Go to the Phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
I was just listening to the comment the young lady gave about the girls not understanding the system. Well, they'll never understand it if the people who's administering it won't take the time to explain it. I mean, she's pointing the finger at the young mothers that need the help. They need the understanding, and rather than her try to address the problem and get people in there that know how to handle the general public and young women in crisis that's not so much aware of how the system might operate, but not only that, trying to help them once they get there, not just turning them away. After all, we pay tax dollars to these people for that purpose, to help them, not for them to be hindered by the very people they come to, the very agencies that's out there.
That's a great.
And as far as us paying Parent Life bill for some French organization, they need to take that back to France.
All right. Well,
we got enough problems in this city without spending more money. We ought to be spending money on these schools and on these recreation centers to get these kids out of the street, not trying to appease a few.
All right, my brother. Hey, I'm with you, and you're right. You're hitting on all cylinders today. I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. Is that something that not just government can do, but is that something the funding community, you know, the United Way, you know, has got their new focus, and one of them is on family and making sure families are sustainable, what they call it, the new you. Is that also something where funders need to insist upon, hey, you know, if we're going to fund these and you're going to provide these services, you got to have a compassionate mentality of your employees. And if they don't understand that, there's, you know, they need to go and get some people in there that understand that.
Absolutely, Amos. I think that all funders expect that will happen. And my perception is that the girls who are receiving services from those kind of organizations are being treated with respect. Mm-hmm. And I think that my perception is one of the problems is when they aren't treated with respect by employees, oftentimes those employees aren't being treated with respect. They're not being compensated fairly. They don't have all the tools necessary to make the right decisions, to have the information to share. So there are so many disconnects. And as funders in the community, as concerned community citizens, we need to see how we can lift up everybody in this equation, that we need to be able to give the girls the tools they need to understand how things work. We need to give the people who are implementing the solutions the tools they need to be compassionate in their work.
239-1310 is half news. Name is, we had some students in here, Jennifer Pope Baker in Valerie, Washington, a couple weeks ago from Attucks High School. We were talking about a variety of issues from their perspective. And some of them talked about the need for, you know, they said, yeah, the calculus was fine. And this one said, I wish I'd had a home ec course. The other one talked about some life skills. As you talk to these young moms, is that a need? You know, not just life skills, not sex education, but just some basic skills. Hey, if you just happen to be in these situations, here's what these agencies do. Here's the rules of the game.
Oh, most definitely. I think all of them expressed a desire to have access to that. The one thing that I noticed is they all enjoyed being moms. They all wanted to do the best thing for their kids. Mm-hmm. They wanted to go above and beyond for them, and they wanted to keep learning so they could be better for them. Mm. They did express frustration in just knowing how to reach to, but I think that's what Jennifer and I were trying to create, was kind of a network so they could have access to more of the resources. And these particular set of girls have access to great resources now through Healthy Start and some of the other organizations, but they expressed a desire for more.
Exactly. And Amos, on the kids, the students you had here from Attucks, I think that extends so far beyond teen moms, mm-hmm. that all young people need to have access to life skills. And it's particularly important at a lower socioeconomic status, but it's really for every young person, so they know how they can thrive and be successful in their life and not be dependent on the goodwill of other people.
What's the next steps? This group going to convene, these young people convene again, a convener of groups or organizations that work with teen moms. What's next steps?
Well, I think that we might have two different next steps with Women's Fund and with the Department of Public Safety. So I'll speak on behalf of Women's Fund. Right now, we're trying to listen to women who fit in either in that 18 to 24-year-old continuum, either they are now, been there, or on their way there, to share with us what their problems, issues, and concerns and needs are. So then we can work with people who can create solutions that are holistic, that can take people from an impoverished existence to one of financial stability. And we know that when somebody, a woman, is able to take care of herself, depending on the goodwill of others, it puts her in a position where she's less vulnerable to crime and her children are less vulnerable to crime. And so I think that that's where we've seen a nice tie-in with the Department of Public Safety. But I'll defer to Valerie to talk about your next steps.
I know with this particular group, we want to try to reconvene them again. We only had about an hour with them, and we just simply didn't have enough time to really discuss all of the issues that they wanted to bring to the table for us. Right. We barely got to talk about the need for affordable, safe housing and some of the other things. So I know we'd like to hold probably another small community conversation with this same group of girls just to continue the dialogue. We want to make sure that they know the resources that exist within public safety. Many of them expressed that they lived in dangerous neighborhoods. We want to make sure, again, that they understand the police resources that they have access to.
Right. And I think the safe neighborhoods, Amos, is a huge part of this. I mean, we got a message from one of the girls early in the afternoon canceling the taxi cab that she had to pick her up and take her to the conversation because she said that she was too scared to ride in a cab in her neighborhood. She was scared to go from her front door to the taxi cab and back again. And so somebody from the organization she's working with went and picked her up and took
she was
her.
Scared to go. This isn't the Bronx, but she was scared to go to the taxi cab.
She was scared to go to the taxi cab. And, you know, that it doesn't matter what any of the rest of us think about her neighborhood. It's the fact that she personally thinks that. Felt that way. And, you know, one of the girls said, you know, affordable housing and low income housing are nice from a financial point of view, but they're all where the crime is. And they said, what we really just need is to have a low-income place for single mothers. That would be perfect, where we would be safe from all the other things happening in the world, where we could grow and be safe with our children.
I know Dr. Wallace McLaughlin has done great work over these years with fathers and families. Do we need to have mothers and families in this city?
We do. We do. And, you know, that is
a whole. I mean, he's done great work as you were talking about the reaction of the young moms to dads. That was something that I wasn't expecting to hear. Are there things that maybe he can do in what he's doing with fathers and families in a way to touch the moms?
I think so. And I think that the organizations that are working with these young women are also working with fathers and families, and they partner well together. You know, the other night we had young women from Future Promises, Healthy Starts, Healthy Families, the Nurse Family Partnership, Youth for Christ, and Project Home Indy. And it's my perception that they're all really working well with each other. They're definitely, I can't say all of them are working with fathers and families,
right.
But I believe that a lot of them are. And so I think those are those good partnerships. But what we need is something for these young women after they age out, after they graduate from high school.
Let me go to Buck right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, we know you're always doing a good job.
Thank you.
But what you guys are talking about with the teen moms and stuff, you know, and, you know, I don't judge teens all that. My thing is, you know, you're talking about the violence and that kind of stuff. You know, I know they can't, well, they pick and choose who their baby father is. But, you know, and I find out from most of the places when I go to most of the subsidized housing, you know, and that kind of stuff, it's the baby daddies that bring the dramas. And then that's what, and so it's kind of like when they really preaching to these girls, you know, preach the point of, you know, I know that they baby daddy and they want to be with them, but it's like they got to preach the point of, you can't bring harm to me and my child because this is where me and my child stays. But they be so entwined in this guy that they really don't look at it like that until somebody from the outside tells them that. And I'm thinking when they talk with them and stress stuff with them, they need to really stress, you know, what's the reason and what's the purpose. And I always tell people who got Southern House, I said, I hate to tell you guys, I said, but you guys, those guys are really trying to live off of you and your kids when they should have been doing what they've both been doing. You wouldn't be in the situation you are, but you are in the situation, so don't let them tear it up and mess it up for you and your kids by bringing all this violence and meanness and stuff around, you know, and that kind of stuff. And it's, I mean, it's just stressing that issue to them. That's what I want to comment on.
That's a great point because from a public safety standpoint, yes, some of the dads are probably great dads. They get it. They understand it. They understand the responsibility. But others may be just what the caller said, you know, bringing that unfortunate potential harm.
That's right. And that's why I think even just further conversations and letting these girls know what resources are out there through the Domestic Violence Network and some of the other organizations. So if they ever are in that type of situation, they'll know where to go. We would also need to do mentoring to keep them out of there so they don't kind of connect with those kind of men and they keep their children away from that.
And well, this is not a black problem.
No.
And I bring that up is because if you asked a lot of people in Indianapolis about the problem of teen moms, both in the black community and in the general community, the perception would be, aha, that's not the problem of the white community. That's a problem of the black community. And even there's been a rise in unwed moms and even unwed teen moms, even though it's a very small percentage, in the Latino community, which goes against the popular perception that the Latino community is extremely family-oriented. It is family-oriented, but some of those mores are changing.
There are teen moms in every demographic in our community, and it would be grossly unfair for anybody to suggest that this is a problem that is just an African-American problem. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely not true. And it is important, like Valerie said, for these girls to have access to information about violence. And it's not just knowing where to turn if they're in a violent situation. It's to know how to recognize a violent situation, because if that's all they know, they don't know what's better. They don't know what's different. One of the young women the other night I thought was really interesting. She said, I'm staying as far away from my baby daddy as I can because, she said, I don't want to be one of the moms who ends up dead. I want my child to know me and to know that I was a good mother for my baby and I was always there for my baby. And that includes staying as far away from as I can from my baby daddy.
239-1310, 239-1310 is after news with Amos. Are there, particularly Jennifer Pope Baker, are there programs in other cities that we can borrow from, steal, or expropriate bright ideas?
We are have been looking across the country for great programs serving young women after they age out of those high school and girl serving programs. And we haven't put our finger on the perfect solution. That doesn't mean that it's not out there. It means that we haven't found it. And through our next initiative, we're doing a nationwide search. And so there might be somebody who raises their hand from a different part of our country who says, we have a successful solution in our community. We'll help bring it to your community.
If people want more information about the next initiative that you guys are doing at the Women's Fund of Central Indiana, in other words, you know, programs that perhaps can help, you know, serve women 18 to 25, maybe a little bit younger than the 18 to 25 here in our city, how'd they get a hold of y'all?
Womensfund.org is the best way because all of our resources are available there, as well as connections on more information about our next initiative and how to connect with a staff person.
And Valerie Washington, you may not know this answer yet, but when people walk by the Department of Public Safety table or booth at Indiana Black Expo, are they going to find, are y'all going to be having community conversations out of the booth?
You know, we just may do that. We're going to have IMPD, IFD. We'll have plenty of public safety folks out there. So we'd be glad to engage in any conversation with anyone that comes by.
Jennifer Pope Baker, the Executive Director of the Women's Fund of Central Indiana, and Valerie Washington, Deputy Director of the Department of Public Safety. She's got to rush out there because she's Deputy Director. You know what I mean? She's over budgets. And this is the day the agencies have to submit their initial wish lists.
That's
something
right.
Something like that. And then you got to go with the red pencil.
And then we start the negotiation.
Oh, they're not going to come and overpromise. They're going to come under. They're going to fool you this year. They're going to come under budget. And then you'll be shocked and you'll see extra money that you'll see. I'm just hoping.
I'll hope for the same.
There you go.
Thank you.
Ladies, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Amos.